Blog Talk Radio.
What's your story? What do you believe? What are you willing for others to see? Are you hiding behind some false idea? The time has come to change your thinking and find your mission as you persevere and build a team where the cause is clear. Challenge yourself and
welcome to What is Success here on BTR's World of Ink Network. This is our debut show. It is 6 p.m. Eastern Time on August 5th. I am one of your hosts, V.S. Grenier, and with me is Marcia Cook, who is also the other host, and we have our guest, John Wilson, with us. So welcome to the show, everybody.
Hi.
Thank you.
And this is our first show. It's What is Success, and it's going to be exciting. It's with Virginia Grenier and myself, Marcia Cook, and we may be losing Virginia because she's going in an elevator now.
I'm traveling. I'm traveling again. I left Utah and I traveled 6 hours in the car to come into California to help with some family stuff. So I'm at the hotel checking in. So
hopefully I'm still on and then we'll have me here. And so anyway, this is going to be a great show. I mean, Virginia and I decided that we were going to do a show called What is Success. Success can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. And what this show is probably going to hopefully show everybody is there's lots of reasons people are successful, and it isn't always about money. It's just about personal happiness a lot of times on what you're doing. And today we have absolutely a great guest. His name is John Wilson. He was on Simon Rose's show, and he's the author of 30 novels and nonfiction, children, teens, adults, and most of them are historically based. He's got a blog. He's a very interesting man, and I heard him on Simon Rose's show with Virginia, and I called Virginia, and I go, Virginia, I think he wants to talk about a lot of other things, so he can come on our show and talk about whatever. And so, John, welcome to our show of whatever. So,
Thank you, Ron.
We're happy to have you here. And Virginia,
I'm happy to be here electronically, yes.
And you, well,
I'm so
you have, yes, and you have so many accomplishments. You know, probably the first place is I think that when I talked to you, you know, today, you wanted to really kind of talk about how you really started, because I don't think.
Yeah, I was just thinking during your introduction there when you were saying, you know, what is success? I mean, I considered myself dramatically successful in 1995. When my first book was published, you know? I mean, that was success.
Right, exactly.
Because, you know, and it is for anybody.
It is very happy. You know, when you finally get a book published, it's not an easy, you know, thing to do. And you are, you know, but then after you get the book published, everybody goes, now what? Okay, so then there's something else.
There's the second book and the third book.
Right.
And
right.
You know,
right.
there's always another hurdle in front of you or another goal in front of you, you know?
And there's always more.
I wanted to just, before we, you know, get on to all the other hurdles and stuff, John, is if you could share with everybody kind of what it was like going through as a new author. Because, I mean, you are a seasoned author. You have multiple books published underneath you. So what was it like for you, you know, looking back now with that first book and you know, the excitement of course, you know, every author, no matter whether it's their first or their 10th or 100th book, I mean, we always get excited when we get the books in our hand, but what was it like and what was kind of your goal to even see that first book to be published to reach that success?
It's interesting. Every author I've ever talked to has a story about how at some point they ignored the rules or flouted the rules, and it worked, right? And I have taught courses on how to get published, both as a freelancer and as a, you know, as a novelist or a nonfiction writer. But you know, my first novel, I was freelancing full time from 1989 through, and I started when my kids came along. I started writing stories. Just little stories for Chickadee magazine and other kids' magazines and so on. And one of them just got longer and longer and longer. And eventually it became a long story, but it still wasn't a novel, and nobody would publish it because it was not an appropriate length for anything. So I chopped the ending off, and I picked a publisher at random out of one of these magazines that I had.
Really?
And I sent them these, which you're never supposed to do. Don't send part of a novel to somebody, right?
Yes. Well.
I sent them the first, essentially, five chapters and said, you know, what do you think of this kind of thing? You know, I did it completely wrong.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear anything for, 10, 11 months. And I normally I follow things up, but I never thought at that point I was ever going to write a book or be a novelist or anything like that.
Right.
And I was busy freelancing and trying to make a living, right? And then I got a letter completely out of the blue saying, this would have been 1993, saying, you know, we like the first five chapters of your novel. Can we see the rest of it? And
yeah.
I, you know, part of me is going, yay! And the other part of me is going, oh, I hope they don't want to see it next week because I don't have anything else, you know?
Right,
but
because
things
say, right, don't send it in. If you send in three or four chapters, make sure that the rest is done.
It's done. Yeah, that's a key point, the first lesson, yeah. But I phoned them up, and they didn't. They were having an editorial board meeting in 2 months. So I thought, okay. I said, that's great, because there's a little bit of polishing I still need to do in the manuscript,
Good thing.
Put the phone down, sat down, and wrote it in six weeks.
So how many chapters did you end up having? I mean, were you planning? How many were you
chapters,
planning?
I don't know. It was about, there was the initial five chapters were about 6,000 words, and the book ended up at about 30,000 words.
Wow. Now, and were you sure you could finish it? Were you sure you could finish it?
No,
I'd
never written anything long
see,
in my life before.
Now that's
the
key point.
No idea.
See, that's the key point, is sometimes, see, a lot of writers, what happens to them is they start a book and they don't think they can finish, but they don't realize sometimes they have to just keep going, and once they're done, they can go cut the parts they really don't like. It's the part when you have a few chapters, you go, oh, I think I should be doing something else. That's the crucial point, because if you don't go on, you're never going to finish. You have to go
on. That's right. And I tell people that are starting out, you know, if one of the best training schools for being an author, any kind of an author, is a freelancer, because you learn to write anything, and you learn to write it a certain length, and you learn to write it within a certain time, because that's when the magazine wants it, and that's the most important thing for them, right?
Yep.
So
I think
it's a discipline that you learn, you know?
But I think, you know, sometimes when you don't follow the rules, I mean, I don't really love rules, because sometimes rules you have to break, and they're not, rules don't always apply to everybody, you know. And
no, that's right.
And that's one of the things. I think a lot of people, you know, when they read, you know, all the books on writing, they want to do it just the way they say, but sometimes it just doesn't work out that way, you know. But the basic thing that most people have to know is they have to really finish it. I mean, you know, because that would be a bad thing. I mean, your career would not have started if you didn't finish that book. If you couldn't finish that book, you probably would have given up at that point,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And I have actually up on my notice board here, I have a quote from Neil Gaiman about writing.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, writing may or may not be your salvation. It might or might not be your destiny. But that doesn't matter. What matters right now are the words, one after another. Find the next word, write it down. Repeat, repeat, repeat.
Right. That's true.
And that's all you do. You can only think about what you're doing at the moment and just keep going at it. And it'll all work out, you know?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I think basically, you know, sometimes when I write a script or something, I'm writing it and I don't think that I could finish, you know. I don't think sometimes I can finish.
Yeah.
And
well,
it's hard if you don't finish, because, you know, you'll never know if you made it. And really, I think people really, they have to realize that sometimes you don't, you know, you think you can't get to that point, and somewhere along the line, like you said before, it happens. It absolutely, something hits you and you go like, oh, okay. You have an epiphany or something.
That's the other advantage of doing some freelancing, writing for magazines and local newspapers and whatnot, because those are easy to complete. There may be a couple of thousand words for an article. So you know you can complete things. You know you can write stuff that is going to be published. So yeah, it's a big step from that to writing a novel or a nonfiction book, but it's still doable, right? You know,
right.
you can write stuff.
Yeah, and I think so. I mean, so here you go with one. All right, so then what did you do next? I mean, did they want your other books that you had in your, you know, as soon as you started doing another book, did they want to take your book, or did they give you a
hard time?
Yeah.
Yeah, that book, it was called Wheat, W-E-E-T, and I had an idea for it, but I never actually used the idea when I came down to do my 6 weeks frantic work to get the thing finished. So they liked it, so I then said, okay, well, I've got another one with the same characters. And it ended up as a trilogy.
The second one,
Wheat's Quest, came out 2 years later, and then 2 years after that, the final one of the trilogy came out.
I've had other people on that have said, you know, sometimes they're very successful with one book, and then what happens is that they are successful. And then all of a sudden they do another one, and they won't take them. And that is a bad thing. Then they end up having to go self-publish, but there's nothing they can do. But even if they've been successful the first time, sometimes they just don't like the other ideas that they have, which could be very difficult, you know, for people.
Yeah.
You know,
which is a huge advantage I have, because my ideas come from history, and history is endless. So
yes,
I can always get ideas from somewhere.
But you
know,
you started out, your background is in geology, right? So that was where you started.
Yeah.
What's your most favorite? I mean, what do you, of all the things you do, because you do a lot of different kinds of genres, what is your favorite genre to do?
I like them all for different reasons, but I suppose my absolute favorite is historical fiction. Is writing a story about something that I know a lot about. So the challenge is to keep the history accurate and weave the story that I want to tell through the history that we know. Because I mean, history is never 100%, right? There's always gaps. Sometimes there's huge gaps.
And everybody sees it
because
they do see it a different way.
Yeah.
I think people see it a different way, because sometimes when you go to the library, well, at the times when you did go to libraries, you'll look up something, and then there's a whole different take on whatever the subject is. So, you know, you're pretty free then in those steps. No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that the flexibility that you have if you're writing a novel that you don't have if you're doing a nonfiction book, which I enjoy doing too, but it's more of a discipline. With a novel, if I'm doing the research, I don't need to find the scenario or the historical event that all the top historians agree on. If there are controversies, I can pick and choose because it's a novel, right? I can pick the bits and bits in. This may have happened. That's all I need. It may have happened, so I can put it in my story, right?
Well, one thing that's really important that I wanted to ask you about, I know you have on your site when, you know, so people can hire you to come to the schools. How did you come about that? Because this is one thing that a lot of people have a lot of trouble with, to get into the schools. So how did you start out with that? You know, you started out years ago, and now it's really difficult to get into a lot of schools, but I noticed that you had on your website, you know, that you want them to contact you. So how did you go about your first one so people will know how to do that?
I can't remember.
It's hard, though. That's a hard thing to do because a lot of times that's very difficult to get
in. I remember I went out in 1996, I guess, it would have been, maybe 97, when I had one or two books out. And I was asked, through some contact that I can't remember, I was asked to go and give a workshop on writing. And primarily the workshop was going to be on freelancing, because that was mostly what I'd done at that point, in Calgary, in Alberta. And I went out to that, and somebody had told me about going into school, so I got the names of some schools, sent out stuff, and got taken into a couple of schools.
Now, what did you send out? Did you send a bio? Did you send the books and the bio? Or?
No. At those times, I think I faxed them stuff. because I had one of these old clunky fax machines back then, right?
Yeah. Right.
And no email or anything, So I sent faxes out to lists of schools, which is really, really tedious. But I got contacts back from a couple of them.
Yeah. Well, see, go ahead, Virginia. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm just kind of curious because, obviously, we're talking about success and how, how authors or whoever, whatever business we're talking about, and obviously, Jay, we're talking about books, but, for me, myself, I know it's harder here in the States anyways to try and get into schools and stuff, and I sometimes think maybe it's my approach or something, and so, being someone who's been doing school visits for a while, and I know it changes constantly, but what would you say is probably like the number one thing that authors do that's actually a bad thing, so it actually hinders them in getting into schools versus helping them get into schools,
right?
Because I sometimes sit here thinking, I have a marketing background, I'm pretty good about marketing, but for some reason, I just haven't hit the right combination, at least for my local schools. I've had schools on the East Coast, contact me, and right now I just can't travel because I have such young kids, from one side of the coast to the other. But for my local schools, I'm having a really hard time. I'm just like, it's got to be my approach or something. So I'm just curious, like, what's the number one and two things that authors shouldn't do when contacting
a
school?
But Jan, don't you travel? You travel, though. That's one of the things, right? You travel.
Yeah, he travels, yeah.
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 You see, in Canada, the center of the publishing industry is Toronto. So most of my publishers are out in Toronto. I have one very good one out here on the West Coast, but most of them are out in Toronto. So my books get promoted in Toronto because that's where the publishers are. So the schools know me. I have been up for a number of awards over the years in Toronto, and they have big award ceremonies in the spring. So if my book's up for an award in Toronto, then I can just contact schools, and sometimes some of the publishers would do that for me too.
Oh, they do
contact
them,
the schools and say, I'm coming out for their Red Maple Award, because those are the awards where the books are sent out to the kids in the schools in November, and there are 10 books on a list, and the kids have to read 5 of them to be able to vote, and then the votes are all collated, and they have a huge big thing down by the lakefront in Toronto in May when, there's hundreds of kids and you get to be a rock star. You go up on the stage and they announce the winner. Nobody knows who it is,
Right.
And it's awesome.
Right.
The kids are all cheering and waving banners for their favorite author and stuff.
I don't know if they have that here. Virginia, what do you think?
No, there is some stuff where I know kids vote. And they're starting to gain, I know the Newbery and the Caldecott are two biggest ones for the children's literary market, but I know the Mom's Choice Award, and they actually now have a sister one, which is the Kids' Choice Award, and I'm not talking about the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice.
Yeah.
This is actually part of the Mom's Choice Award, which is about literary works, magazines, books, websites for families, kids, that kind of stuff, e-books. And I do know that they have a biggest award ceremony, and there's also, I think, ALA does one as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, but I don't think that it's probably the same kind of thing. It's out wherever the hub is. I don't know exactly where ALA's hub is. I think I know somewhere Midwest. It's Midwest somewhere in the middle of the United States. For their, it's probably a big deal, but, it's kind of like Hollywood has their huge book festival and you win an award, people out in, Kansas don't hear about it, but if you live in the L.A. area, you hear about those book authors.
Yeah.
So it's.
As far as Virginia is answering your question about the two things not to do, I don't really know. I mean, it varies so much from school district to school district.
Yeah.
With some school districts out west here, if you send an email to the teacher librarian or the principal or whomever, it'll just come straight back.
Right.
They won't even look at it. Other ones will, you have to go through the school board.
Right.
And
that's
if you get
it,
a name Yeah. If you get a name from somebody who's on the school board of the local district, and you say to them, look, you know, I'm an author, I'm prepared to go into the schools, you know, I can talk to this grade or that grade and so forth, would it be okay if I sent you a short blurb that you could send out around the schools?
Yeah.
And if they say no, you move on to the next school district. If they say yes, then you send them just a couple of paragraphs, you know, saying how wonderful you are. And they will send it out to the schools, and then you – but a lot of them are prepared to do that.
Yeah,
you know?
Because when Simon was – when Simon, I think, had his first show that I was listening to with Virginia – when Virginia was on, I think we were both – actually, we were both on that day.
Yeah,
we were both on at the beginning. And I said, Simon, I asked him, I said, do you charge? And he goes, well, why should I work for free? And, you know, the thing is, he's right. And see, this is one of the things now that's become, like, I think writers are hesitant to charge anything because then they think the people, you know, they won't take them. And then if they don't charge anything, then they're not going to make any money. And, you know, it's writers, you just don't know what to do sometimes because you don't want to be, you know, over anxious and just, you know, put a price that might not be something that they can afford. But they do have budgets, but sometimes, especially new writers, they don't know how to just say to them, you know, what type of, you know, rates are you willing to pay? Or, you know, if you're going to be, like let's say I went to a school in the Chicagoland area, and I went to six or seven classes every half hour, and I didn't get paid.
Ooh.
I know.
Oh.
It was. I was even tired of my own books. I was reading them going, like, okay. You know, and
okay.
You know,
well,
and we talked, and then they asked me to read the book, and I thought, well, they wanted me to read the book after I talked, so I guess they're still interested. And they were very young, but they did buy my books, and that was a good thing.
That's one way of doing it. The up here there is the Canada Council, which gives grants that you can apply for travel, for research, and for book projects and things like that. They also have programs where schools can apply to them for money to bring in authors. There's also the Writers Union up here, which has a similar program.
Yeah.
And they have a fixed rate, right?
Yeah.
So basically, across the board, this is the standard rate. So the schools know that, or most of them do, and the... And the writers know that, so that gives you a baseline, right?
I
wanted to talk about the whole, you know, free thing, because when I first started writing and I was having my picture book was first being published. Hold on, my 18-month-old's running down the hallway here. Anyways, so I had gotten together with a group of authors, and what we were going to do was, you know, 1 week in October, which is, you know, during the month of reading and writing appreciation, we were going to do, you know, for only our local schools, free author visits with, you know, the mm-hmm. stipulation that we would, you know, should be allowed to sell at least 200 of our books. And I actually lined up with the school to do that with them, you know, got everything arranged, called them, you know, a week ahead to make sure everything was ready to go. The day I showed up, the school completely forgot. And so what do you do in that situation as an author? I mean, I'm not kidding. And I felt so small. And then I'm like, I was still so new as an author. I was like, well, it's not like I could, you know, puff up my feathers and say, well, I'm here. You know, you need to cancel all your classes. And, you know, because if I was a New York bestselling author, one of the top Utah authors here, you know, at the time, like Brandon Waller, James Nestor, or Rick Walton, I probably could have, you know, kind of gotten up in their face a little bit, not saying that those three would do it because they wouldn't, but I just turned around and walked back out like I just wasted my whole entire day for nothing. And so as great as the idea is, from that experience being so brand new, I learned that's actually, it can burn you.
Yeah.
Because they don't take you as seriously.
Some schools are great. And they organize a lunch for you and a whole bit, right? And it's really good. Yeah. Other schools, the teachers kind of regard it as an opportunity to do their marking or, you know,
yeah,
something like that, or the school has no idea that you're coming because the librarian never told them or something, you know. It varies.
I guess what we're probably saying to people is, I guess, depending on where they live is depending on what the school system does. And I think that they, just because they hit one school system doesn't mean they should just forget about ever doing it. They should probably go to another school system. But I think what happens is, people get rejected, and, you know, this is one of the reasons we have shows like this, is because we don't want people to stop if they feel rejected, because we've all been rejected in a lot of ways, and you just keep going. For whatever the reason is, we just keep going, you know. You just
Rejection's part of the package of the business that we're in, you know. One of the schools that I enjoyed most was, years ago, I was on tour in Ottawa, and I had an afternoon free, Thursday afternoon or something. Nobody had filled that. So I was thinking, oh, I can go for a wander in Ottawa. And somebody emailed me, teacher emailed me and said, look, we're a school in Ottawa. We noticed you were coming on tour. We're wondering if you have any time left. We're a little school. We don't have any money, but, you know, the kids would really appreciate it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I've got Thursday afternoon. What else am I going to do? So I said, sure, I'll come along. And it was one of these, it was an inner city school. It was very small. It was very old. They had, the library was like something out of Harry Potter, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
there's
piles of books all over the place and stuff. They squeezed in, 15, 20 kids into the only space that they had in the library. And I sort of, thank you so much for coming along. I'm fine. So I went along and talked to the kids and showed them my books and read a bit and told them stories, so forth. And at the end, the librarian came up and she said, you know, that was absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much. Here you are, gave me, and often you get a little card afterwards saying thank you, signed by the kids or whatever, right? So I think, and this is what it is. I said, thank you, there's no problem, that's great, you know. Walked out, got into the car, opened the card, and there was a $20 bill in the card.
Oh, wow.
Which was obviously something that she had put in there because
that
she felt guilty that.
Yeah, that was
really
nice.
And I thought, you know, that's.
Right.
That's worth a lot more than
$20. Sometimes it's rewarding. You know, that's the thing. You know, sometimes that is a rewarding thing. And, you know, that's why another thing about the show is, like, what is success? I mean, you know, because everybody thinks that as soon as they write a book, they're going to make $1 million. But you have to put so much into it. If you don't have it in you to put a lot into it, you shouldn't do it. Because this, you have to feel it. When I think teachers and kids, especially when you're writing for kids, they know if you love this or not. And, you know, they can tell. Kids are very smart that way. And, you know, they know if you aren't interested in really being there or you're interested in really being there. So, I mean, they can tell. They pick it up. And which, even if they can't afford it, it doesn't sometimes mean that these kids shouldn't have authors. And a lot of times the libraries, and they're really denying kids. Like, I know I myself would go to some of these libraries. So right off the bat, they say, well, we don't have any money. So I said, all right, you know, I can still come, you know, because the kids...
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're waiting for the huge children's author to walk in their door. And what would that be? They're not coming to these small schools. The kids are suffering.
Yeah.
You know,
here's something too, Marsha, which is a great point that you brought up. I mean, and I hear this too a lot. We don't have the budget. I mean, I have family and friends who are teachers. You know, out in the Washington School District of Utah. And I hear that so much for them. And, I mean, and when they do get an author, you know, they bring in our top three authors, which I named, which is Rick Walton, James Dashner, and Brandon Mull. Because those are our three really big top, and if they can, they'll try and get Stephanie Meyer. Because those are like our really big New York best-selling names in Utah, local writers. But they're all in the Salt Lake Basin. So to come to St. George, it's about a four-hour drive. So, you know, there's some travel they have to pay and all that. And there's a lot of great local writers where I live in Washington County, and the school's like, well, we just can't afford it. But yet they afford it for these big guys, you know, some of the schools that have more funding. And I'm sure thinking, but there's grants, there's all kinds of stuff that is available to schools for them to get funding.
It's the kids are suffering. It's not, you know, and I think across the board now, I was telling someone, I think what they're doing is, because there's so many authors out there, and a lot of them are not good, and everybody has a book. So I think across the board, they just go, no. okay, unless somebody knows somebody. Mm. And which, you know, I guess what it means is you have to keep pursuing it and maybe go into that library if it's in your area. Because, I mean, that's what I'm going to do a lot of times, because I know if I'm there and I'll give them a book, then I'll talk to them about it, you know. And because I think sometimes they're just emailed and phone and they just don't, they just say no.
Yeah.
It's just easier.
Yeah. Well, for a local library, go in. Introduce yourself to the librarian.
So. Yeah.
Give her a free copy of the book and say, you know, this is for your library. I'm local. If you're interested in me coming in and talking about the book, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know?
I want to ask you about the free book. Okay. Now, this is the thing. You are traditionally published, okay? And people that aren't traditionally published, they feel that sometimes, you know, they have to buy books. Well, I think that some of the traditional publishers now are not, you have to buy books. And some of the authors don't want to do this, but I think if the author doesn't want to buy books, that's really a shame, because if they don't want to buy any books to give out, then they're really not going to get anywhere. They don't you think they have to buy some of their own books and give them out? I mean, I'm feeling that.
Well,
that's
not necessarily to give them out. I mean,
give them out to the school.
I often give books, you know, to a school library or something if I'm in there
or
whatever.
That's what I mean.
When I go along to schools, I take. Mm-hmm. If I'm driving, for instance, a tour in Western Canada here, I take boxes of books with me to sell.
Oh, you do?
Of the schools will say, we don't like doing that. That's fine.
Right.
And then I say, well, is it okay if I give out, a sales sheet, a list of my books and the price?
Wow.
For the kids, right?
Now, that's a great idea.
And often they'll say yes. Some of them will say, yeah, well, they'll send out stuff, and the kids will all come in. And I keep it, you know, like $5 or $10, a nice round figure.
The
teachers will send something out,
really,
and the kids
idea.
Will come in on the day with the money.
Can you elaborate on the kind of list that you write, what you write on there? That's a great idea. Nobody has said that yet. I've not heard anybody do that. That's a very good idea.
It's basically just an order form,
okay,
a very simple order form. You
that's
just list
great
the books.
Idea.
You list the price of the books, and you include all the taxes and everything in it, so it's just a nice, round, simple figure.
Right.
And then you say how many copies they want, and you leave a space for what dedication they want in it.
Oh,
right?
Great idea.
Often the librarian will handle that. The kids will take them home, and they'll bring them back, and they'll give them to the librarian, and the librarian will send the order or email the order to me. I'll get all the books together, sign them appropriately, and ship them back to the school, wherever that is.
You know, because I've not heard that. That's a really good idea. You know, because when
I've
I went
done
to
that,
the,
actually,
yeah,
Marcia.
You have done that? It's a really good idea.
I have done that, and I know, I've never, and it's basically like, I've never heard, I'm like, I actually do that, and I've never brought that up. The other thing that works, too, is like when I go into the schools, and this is why I go in as an, because normally I don't really ever get to go in as an author because my name isn't big enough, but I get to go in as an editor. For some reason, being a children's magazine editor gives, they want me for that. So I'll go in, and I do a workshop with the kids because, you know, kids write a lot of reports. And so I talk about how to write nonfiction to write it to where it doesn't read like you're reading a textbook. So basically teaching them how to write like a nonfiction writer their school reports. So it's entertaining. It's, you know, it's not just I basically plagiarize stuff out of a book and just change it slightly with some of my words and there's my report type writing, which is what most kids do. Now, when I do that, I actually have a certificate that says that they've participated in the Stanley Bookman, workshop, which is our mascot for Stories Trail Magazine. And at the bottom, I have the magazine's website, and then I have, you know, and I put, you know, V.S. Grenier's author website, and then underneath that says, you know, where there's free coloring pages and books available for sale. So kids will be drawn to my website that way to sell books.
See, because like when I went to the schools, what they did, the schools did it for me. They were really nice. They wrote out it and they sent it home to the parents. And, they sent, and a lot of them bought books. And then, you know, they wanted it autographed. And, you know, they didn't give me enough time. But I was rushing and doing it, you know, but I did it, you know, because I had seven or eight classes. But, I mean, the school did it, and they were really nice about it. And then there were some kids that couldn't afford to get the books. So what I did is then I left the school. I left them some free books for the library so the kids could look at it. But I think it's a good idea when you have all of this organized by the school, if they will, you know what I mean, because that helps a lot.
The one absolute, whatever the school does and whether they allow you to sell books in the school or not, the one thing that you must always do is every kid that comes to one of your readings or presentations has to leave the room with something of yours.
Right. Right.
Right.
They were
I use bookmarks.
Bookmarks. Right. And some of these kids, they go, oh, they said, can you give us your card, business card? I go, okay, I would. And, you know, I gave a business card. And then some of them said, do you think that you could call my house and talk to my mom? I go, I don't think your mom would want you to give your phone number to me, you know, but here's my card, you know. And, I mean, you know, these kids, I mean, and they're very bright and they know what they like and they're very interested in really learning. And so a lot of these libraries, hopefully if there's any librarians out there listening, don't let you know, these kids not have what they want, because they do want to see the authors. They love it. They really enjoy it.
Yeah. And they don't care if you're a New York bestseller or if you're a debut author. They don't know the difference.
No,
as long as
you can entertain
an
them and share your passion with them, then they're good. The thing that makes me really nervous is when the kids come up at the end and say, could you sign my shirt?
Yeah.
And you think, well, what would your mom say? Oh, she'll be fine with it. And you think, okay, well, I don't know.
But, you know, there's kids, I mean, that's the best way to learn is by going to talk to them because you can actually see what's it. You know, they really are very interesting and they're very interested also in writing and they do their own projects. So, I mean, they actually ask questions. I mean, they really do, and they're very interested, and it's such a fun visit. I mean, for me, that was like, these are the best things that I do. I love that. It's such fun.
Yeah, I love doing that as well.
Yeah,
it's great. And that's one of the problems with e-books. You can't sign them.
I wanted to ask about that. I mean, because that's definitely the wave of the future. And, I mean, I know a lot of sci-fi writers and a lot of romance writers. You have some of the, you know, horror writers and mystery writers doing well within ebooks, but you know, and I'm starting to write some young adult novels. I actually have two that are in the works, but you know, like picture books, which is where you usually go visit elementary schools, and then of course if you write YA, you go to the high schools, and it's like, how can you really share reading with? And I love ebooks. Don't get me wrong, but I feel, to me at least, to be successful in the children's market, so you need to still do print books with ebook as basically a bonus to the fact that it's you know, print.
Yeah, I agree. I think true. Yeah.
I think we're a long way from losing the print book. I think the balance will move more and more towards ebooks. But I mean, for instance, I have a Kindle, and it's still a new toy, but I plan to download books on that, and I have, and I read them on that, but I'm still going to buy books, right?
Yeah.
For novels, I'll just buy, you know, a paperback, but for nonfiction, I'll pay more, and I'll buy a hardcover with the illustrations and all the rest of it, right? And I'll still do that, and I'll take my novels that I'm going to read when I'm on the plane going to Toronto or wherever on the Kindle, and so I'll be running both things at the same time, right?
I have a new book coming out. It should be out in another month, a few weeks. And, you know, I was originally going to do it just as an e-book, but I changed my mind. I'm going to do it as, you know, a regular print book, because I still think it's there. And I think that you can't go to schools and you can't share it with the kids on an e-book. It's not the same, you know. And that's who we want really to, you know, we want the kids to, you know, still have the same values of writing and care about books like we do. So I think that that's probably why you're right. It's not with the kids market. That's a slow market. I'm sure it's not. It is nice for them, you know, to do these things. But it's also nice for them to. And they do. And the kids say they want to hold books. I mean, they. I've asked them that question, and they do. I wanted to bring up something that, John, that you were talking about today, and about the story about what your wife said when the little boy didn't. You know, when she was talking to the little boy.
Yeah, it was earlier on today. My wife called me, and she's a family therapist, and she had a boy in I don't know 10-year-old, 12-year-old, something like that. And you know, she did the therapy session with him, and at one point towards the end, she was saying, "Well, you know, tell me something that you really will never ever do." You know, the kid's trouble, motivation, and so forth. But so, what would you never ever do? And quick as a flash, he says, read a book. And she said, well, you know, it's funny you should mention that, but my husband writes books. What would you say if you got one of his books? oh, the kid says, well, you know, that'd be a bit different.
Yeah.
And she said, well, you know, I'll talk to him. She said, what kind of things do you like in a book? And he said, oh, blood and gore and death and, you know.
Yep.
And I thought, well, yeah, I can do that. That's not a problem, you know.
Yep. See, that is what they like. I mean, that is what they like. So, you know, that's very interesting that he considered not reading, but then he thought about it for a minute and he thought, well, if I was going to read, I'd read gory books. You know, I'd read books.
Well, you know, what I love about the story, which goes back to, you know, earlier when we first started the show, is, you know, you're talking about authors and how when they first start, you know, part of why some of them don't see success is because they're so focused on following the rules, which, you know, I always joke with everybody saying it's kind of like the pirate code from the Pirates of the Caribbean. They're guidelines, everybody. And, you're a prime example of that, John. You've broken that rule because everybody says, oh, you can't have blood, guts, and gore in a book. It's a children's book. But you do it, and it sells.
Yeah.
But you do it. And it works. You do it in a way that works.
I have two rationales that I use when publishers sort of step back a little bit from that. One is that it's historically accurate, right? So if I'm describing a boy in the trenches at Passchendaele in the First World War, it was really like that. And I can show them where I got these stories from, right? So it's historically accurate. That undercuts an awful lot of criticism.
Yes, it does.
The other thing is that I mean, I write for everybody. I write for anybody that likes a good, exciting story, kids, adults, anybody, you know.
Right.
But I have a reputation for writing for boys because they are drawn into wars and battles and stuff like that, right?
Right.
And they tend to be reluctant readers anyway.
Right.
So my argument with a publisher is always, okay, so you want this book to sell to boys. If they're not going to read my book unless it grabs their attention and holds it all the way through. If they stop reading my book, they're not going to go off and read Anne of Green Gables or, you know, a nice little character-driven story about what happens to a family and wherever, right? They're going to off, and the alternative to reading my book is playing a video game where they can make people's heads explode. Now tell me my book's too violent, you know?
Well, no, it's true, and I can attest to this, and yes, here I am, I'm bringing him up again, but my son, after I did the show with you and Simon, I went and pulled up your website, and I said, hey, come look at this author's book, you might be interested, because my mom had bought him the Hunger Games series, and, you know, he was interested, and Hunger Games, I don't know if you've read it, John, or not, I mean, I haven't read it, I wasn't interested, but, you know, it's a little bit more on the violent side, considering, you know, most YA books that are out there. And my son enjoyed it, but, you know, he's like, it was okay. Anyway, so I showed him your books. He starts looking at it, and he's like, well, you know, and your most recent one, I know it's Blood Something's in the title.
Written in Blood,
Written in Blood, he's interested in that one, so I actually ordered it for him, and it's actually came. He just hasn't sat down to read it yet. But after he looked at your website, what did he do? He went and got on his Wii and got on Call of Duty.
Yeah,
which is exactly that. It's a World War II violent shoot 'em up, blow your head off game.
But you know what though? But he's going to read, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, he is, because that's exactly, and that's what he loves. He loves historical fiction, just like his, you know, his dad does. Yeah. And that's what they. I mean, they sit there and watch the military channel, and you know, just the other day it was like the whole Holocaust, you know, show was on. And where they're actually showing real photos from World War II of the concentration camps. And my son was just like, I thought for sure he was going to get up and be sick from it. And he was just like, this is so fascinating and just so awful. But, you know, he's like, it's really making it real for me.
Right, because when I go, John, I wrote a Holocaust survivor story. So when she speaks, she's still alive, and she speaks at the Holocaust Museum, the kids are 12 years old. They're in eighth grade. And they ask questions, and they're boys, okay? And I have been to many of the times that she speaks. They do not utter a word. They are, and they just sit there. There's 100 kids maybe in an auditorium, not a word. And then when they're done, they ask her questions because they've learned about it in school, and then now they're actually seeing somebody that was
in the
concentration camp. And to them, she is like Anne Frank, and that's what they read. And she actually was in the camp with Anne Frank, but Anne Frank was just Annie then. You know what I mean? She wasn't Anne Frank then. But it's like, and they really do want to ask questions, and they're boys, you know, and girls. Mm-hmm. But the boys are, they're they are so quiet, and then they all rush up to her at the end. It's amazing, and they shake her hand.
Yeah.
And boys can like stories. It just has to be what they want to learn.
It has to be what interests them. You know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Girls. My daughters, for instance, would when they were little, they would read a book, and they would tell you afterwards exactly what was wrong with the book.
Really?
My
wow.
son would never do that.
Yeah.
You know,
we
give
yeah.
it 25 pages and off to do something else if it doesn't catch his attention, right?
Yeah.
They read
like
differently, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They do read differently. I want to bring up, you know, because we talked a little bit, you know, we've been kind of talking about stuff that, you know, authors can do to help, you know, get their careers going. And if they're, you know, obviously because you write for mostly, you know, the children's market, you know, the schools and stuff. But one thing, and Marsh and I have been talking about this a lot, there's a lot of authors, and because, you know, even if you're with a traditional publisher, it doesn't matter big or small, unless you're like one of their like top A-list authors and they're going to pump most of their money into you for marketing, and even then they still have to do a lot of marketing themselves. You know, authors have to market now. You know, it doesn't matter if you're self-published,
yeah.
small press, medium press, even big press, because I know some big press
right.
guys that
yeah.
still have to hire their own publicists and do some of the trench work themselves. But the thing that I'm noticing is because authors are feeling that stress, they're getting so focused in marketing and stuff that they're not going back and writing their next book. And we actually know a few authors who've written one
right.
book, and years have passed where they haven't written another book. And
right.
so we feel like, and then they're like, well, I'm not doing as well as I want to be doing. And you've written so many books that I sit there and think, and Marsh and I have feel this way,
we
that it seems
about,
that
right.
you've got to get another book out there. But
yes.
what would you say, John, would probably be like, if you get past this point, you're going to start hurting yourself because you don't got another, you know, you don't have another book in the works.
Right.
No, your prime focus is writing. It has
right.
to be. I mean, that's mm-hmm. presumably what you love doing if you're an author.
See, that's exactly.
I mean, no,
right.
nobody
that's
would do it who didn't love doing it. You know.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
Like Orwell said, starting a novel is like coming down with a long and rather unpleasant illness.
That's true. That's really true.
You have to write, and I mean I've gone through this recently. One of my publishers went bankrupt at the turn of the year, and I got some books back from them. Now the new ones, they published 2/3 of a trilogy, and I've written the third book. So
that's
that
hard.
Trilogy I am trying to market to traditional publishers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because that still has sales potential, right?
Yes.
Right.
Some of the backlist books that have been out for a few years, no publisher is going to take them on now at this point.
Yeah.
So I've
right.
been putting them out as
e-books. Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, selling them for $2.99 as
yeah.
opposed to the $11.99 or $12.95 or whatever
right.
it was that they sold for
right.
as paperbacks. And it's been a fascinating process. It's been a huge learning curve to do this, and the temptation is to become utterly absorbed in it,
yeah.
and to think, okay, I've got that book uploaded on Kindle or Smashwords. It looks good. I got to do the next one, and I have a deadline for the end of this month for a book that I have to finish, and I
mm-hmm.
have a deadline in October for another book that I have to finish. I'm almost finished the one for this month, and I'm halfway through the one for October. But I had to force myself to go back and sit down and finish that book. Once I got back into it, it was fine.
But you know,
it was...
You're
you
right,
know,
because you know what I'm considering it? It's something like... It's kind of like you... It's almost like you're blocking, you know. It's really, that's what happens. You get, like, you make a definite time that you want to finish. But I think it's really become so bad for people with all this marketing that they actually do, like you said, they're not doing what they like to do. Or
yeah.
I
don't know. I mean, for me, partly putting the books out is exciting because...
Yeah.
I love learning how to do it. And also I had to do the covers myself because I didn't have the rights to the original covers, right? So
right.
I
yeah,
have been taking
something.
Photographs
yeah.
and working out the covers that way. And that's creative and that's fun, and I've enjoyed that, right? So
but
there's that element
were,
to it.
If they went bankrupt, even if they went bankrupt, should they be, you know, the fact that they're bankrupt, you know, if they're bankrupt... you know, should you be able to have the covers? Should you? I mean, what happens then?
Well, the covers were designed by somebody. Now, I'm assuming that if the covers were photo montages, for instance, that were designed by somebody in the publishing house, and the publishing house has now gone bankrupt,
right?
Those ones would be all right.
Yeah.
But if they were done, which several of them were, they were pictures that were painted, commissioned by the publishing house. And I'm not clear on the rights to that.
Yeah.
But also the other thing, too, is that, and this is something that publishers, as far as I can see anyway, haven't twigged yet. There's a world of difference between the cover of a book that you pull off a shelf in a bookstore and look at, mm-hmm. and the cover of a book that you see for the first time the size of a postage stamp.
Yeah.
And what publishers are doing at the moment is they're trying to recreate the book that you pick off the shelf as an e-book. And you can't do that. One, the cover doesn't work the same way. I mean, some covers do, but a lot of them don't. There's too much detail, and you can't see it. It's got to be bold. It's got to be bright. It's got to have very little lettering that you can read when it's an inch and a half tall.
Right.
And then inside the book, it's, you know, it's not pages anymore. It's a flow of information because the pages are different on every iPad, Kindle, Kobo, Nook, whatever, right?
Yeah, the
each formatting
are very
is different. So you've got to look at it as a flow of information rather than discrete pages that you're turning over.
I think at the beginning of e-books, when they started doing e-books, I don't even think they had covers at that time. Some people didn't put covers on, and they just put their book out. But that is an interesting question because it's come up, and I actually was looking that up, and I couldn't the answers I was getting in the copyright was not – it wasn't – I just wanted to really know who owns that cover sometimes, you know, and really who it does belong to eventually. That's the thing, and it wasn't clear to me what it meant. And so I think that's probably – it's still something that's not clear because there's so many avenues that these covers could have been at. But when a company does go bankrupt, that is, you know, something to think about what could happen if you really love it.
I just
cover.
Haven't wanted to chance it, you know.
Yeah,
I don't want to get into
that kind
of a mess. But,
well,
I mean, I got my website up and running this afternoon. It's johnwilsonauthor.com. And on there, I've put a couple of pages or a page for the e-books, the four e-books that I've put up. And I'm trying to canvas feedback.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if anybody's out there listening, please go to my web and buy all my books anyway. But go to my web and have a look at the covers that I've put up, the four covers that I put up as e-books. And there's a contact button with my email. So
I'll check it out,
if you think the covers are great, email me. If you think the covers are lousy, email me. I'm looking for feedback all the way, you know.
I think when I was on it today, I was on your website. I didn't know it was just a newer one. But I think your website is it's very good because boys will definitely be attracted to it. It is absolutely male-oriented. And I think that your readers – but then I also read some – of the comments, and there's girls that say, like, hey, what about us? We like to read your books,
yeah,
too.
There's
you know?
Yeah, I know. I remember that. Well, actually, that's my blog you were on.
Yeah, that's
and I'm
good,
going to
though,
be I'm
really
going to be
good.
Changing that. Well, because I've got all of that information formatted slightly differently on the web now, on a website. Yeah.
But
and
I,
what
I
I'm
like
going to do is use the blog as it's the same kind of idea on the web, just it's done a bit more professionally.
Yeah.
And the blog I will just use for new titles,
or
updating my tours and that sort of thing. So the
but
web
like
will be the central focus.
Let's talk about that really quick because I know that's where you're going to go, Marshall, with the comments. But you know, I have a lot of authors who are just getting started, and like, you know, maybe they only write articles for magazines or short stories, you know, haven't published a book, and a lot of them will ask me, because I do a workshop called, you know, How to Sell Yourself, which is, it's a marketing workshop, because most authors, you know, basically go bury their head in the sand like an ostrich when it comes to marketing, because, you know, they're like, I'm a writer for a reason, because I'm a creative person, I'm not a business person, and I'm like, well, it's changed, you're not just selling a book anymore, you're selling yourself, you are a business,
Yes.
Even if you don't want to be. And
right.
So my background is merchandise marketing, and so I get it. That's why I do this workshop, because, you know, it's what my major was in college. And authors come up to me all the time, well, do I really need a blog? Do I really need to have a website? Do I really need to have, you know, a fan page on Facebook? Do I really need to be on Twitter? And they, you know, all those questions start coming up, and I'm just like, well, if you want to be successful and to build your platform, that is part of that, you know, for your online world. And then the next problem is okay, so now you got this blog, and so people are like, well, I don't get any comments ever. You know, I'll get like one or two. How do I get more comments?
That's the most important thing that nobody's doing. See, that's one thing.
Yeah.
Because most people don't realize that it matters, even if they say, oh, I liked it. But I think when they get to comments, what they do is they skip it and they go on to the next blog and read it. They just forget about the first blog and don't say one word, even if they got something out of it. So I think that that's one thing that people need to know, is that hopefully when they read something, they'll have some comment, good or bad. At least they have something to say, and that really is good for the author. They want
to
know.
Yeah. Signing guest books.
People say, oh, well,
I
didn't. You know, I didn't like the cover, for instance. So they don't do anything. But you know, if you I really like the cover, but I don't think that bit of it worked. Email the author and tell them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
I think we're used
to editorial criticism. We can take it, and it's valuable information. You know,
I think it's really valuable.
So,
but what I was going to say is what I noticed with what you're talking about with your website, John, and with your blog and stuff too is. You know, you right away, the first thing you said to our listeners on the for the show, you know, they're listening now and later on demand, is, you know, well, if you go there, you know, email me. There's a contact page. And, oh, there's a comment section. The thing is, I think that's, and I've been thinking about this, Marcia, because I know we've been talking about, I think that's, like, been one of the downsides to authors being successful or making their websites or the blog successful.
Right.
Is they're so, they're just pumping information where it's all promotional information, like, oh, I'm here, or I got, you know, or buy my book because it just got on Kindle, you know, I just put on Kindle, you know, from paperback, or, you know, I'm going to be at this school.
Mm-hmm.
They're not interacting, they're not asking questions. So when people visit those, like their site, they don't want to sign their guest book, or they don't want to comment on their blog because they're like, well, you're just, it's basically reading an advertisement. You're not interacting. And I think that's probably where the problem is
there's not enough interaction. Yeah, I think what they have to do now is I think people really have to pay attention. And like, you know, John, what you just said, not always think about marketing, think about writing, you know, and think about, even when you're writing your blog, think about something that matters to you, not just where you're going to be or, you know, what you've done. But something that maybe could help another writer might be something, you know, and help
our or your readers and fans.
Well,
and my idea is, I mean, when the first book I put out as an ebook, North of Franklin, is a novel for adults, and I put it out about 6 weeks ago, I guess, and it. I did some promotion, like I emailed people, I got links put into web. It's about the Arctic, and I got links put into people that I know that run blogs and websites in the Arctic and so forth, right? So I did a certain amount of promotion around that. I then have put 3 YA novels up there, and I've done no promotion with those. My plan is to put another couple up there by September when the schools go back, and then when I start touring, going to schools, I will promote them there.
My idea is that my
website is going to be the node, right, the center of the web.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that there's going to be, I'll have a Twitter presence, a LinkedIn presence, a Facebook presence, my blog, and so forth. So all these points will be out there, and they'll be linked to other people's blogs and so forth, and it'll draw people in to that central
You also have presentation and rates, you know, and you have presentations, but you don't say the price. You just say, you know, that you could, they can get in touch with you. But I think the way you put that presentation and rates is a very interesting concept, because sometimes you – people don't use that word, and maybe that's a good idea, because when you're saying what you can do for the schools, is something, it says presentation and rates, knowing that you can actually do this in schools, and so you actually have something that they can click on and see exactly what you can do for the schools. So I think that those are interesting things that you've come up with that I've not seen on a lot of websites or blogs, you know, things like this where you're actually saying what you want them to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a difference. I mean, you know, you've done a lot of marketing for yourself, but maybe you're not realizing it, but you have very good marketing on your, you know,
blog.
Yes, no, but it's very interesting, and it gets
no,
the
but,
person.
That's what right. I think that's why John's been successful. I mean, not that you're not a great writer, because you are, but because even though I haven't read the whole book, Written in Blood, I have flipped through it, and I'm very impressed with it. And but you're very subtle. I mean, you get yourself out there, but you don't do it where you're like, and I think that's where authors are missing it anyways. You're
right.
not like screaming in people's face, here I am, buy my book, here's my website, come visit it.
Right.
You know, you do it very subtly in a non-aggressive way, which I love.
Yes, I think it's great.
A lot of it has to be targeted. I think some people think that if you just get out there, and you get a lot of people as your friends, you get a lot of hits on your blog, that can be done. It takes quite a lot of work, but it can be done.
Right.
But does that sell books? You know,
right, exactly.
How does that translate
exactly.
into your career?
Right.
You know,
right.
so you have to. It has to be targeted. So you know, one thing that people can do. I am a member of the Writers Union in Canada. I'm a member of Canscape, which is a children's authors and illustrators organization. Quill, which again
is that only a Canadian one? Is that Canadian? Is that just?
It's the Writers Union of Canada, but there is a Writers Union in the States as well. And
SCBWI.
They offer you you know, a sort of chat room kind of thing that's private for everybody on the organization. And they also generally give you a web page, like one page where you can put a photograph up, say a little bit, and a link to your web page. And a couple of them have lists of authors who are prepared to go into schools.
That's good. That's good.
So a school who thinks, okay, the Parents Association has had a book sale, we've got a bunch of money here, we can get an author in this year, they go to Quill or Canscape, and they look through the list, and they think, I know that person, I've never heard of that person, or look, that person writes historical fiction, that would be cool, that would fit in with our socials class, stuff like that. So there's that too, you know. So that's worth looking into, local writers, organizations, and stuff.
This is one of the reasons why Virginia and I put you on the show, because you are, this is what a success really is, because you haven't really said to anybody, oh, you're going to make all this money. This is what success is. You enjoy what you do. You're out there. The kids obviously like what you do. Your website tells them what they need to know, and it isn't all about money. It's about the profession of writing and how good all of this really can be for a writer if they write instead of market 24 hours a day, which that's what it becomes. And I think it's writer's block. I'm beginning to think that it's kind of like a writer's block, because I think people are so busy marketing, they're not writing.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, I mean, there are times in every novel that I write that I sit up here in my office looking at my computer screen and thinking, I should really go and cut the grass.
Yeah,
or
kitchen
floor needs scrubbing, or I could rearrange all my books, you know, or something like that. You know, you'll do almost anything. You have to force yourself to sit there. And when it's something like marketing, which can be fun,
the
temptation is so much greater. You know?
Yeah, it's like
I agree. I mean, like for me, you know, like I said, with my background in marketing, I mean, I wouldn't have gone to college if I didn't enjoy it. So I really find it hard, and I mean, and trust me, I write a lot of articles and short stories, so even though I don't have like a bunch of books under my belt, I only have my one book because I haven't, you know, worked on my other four that are like all written and waiting for me to revise and submit. I am writing short stories, and I'm writing short stories, and I'm writing, you know, articles and stuff in the magazine markets and news.
Right.
So I am writing, but it's really hard because I'll get in front of the computer, I'm like, well, I really should do this marketing because it'll help get Stories for Children Know More. I should really do this because I need to promote this workshop, or I have this World of Ink tour going on, you know, and I need to make sure that this is happening for, you know, on these blogs. And then I have to stop myself and go, no, this is my hour to write, and all that can wait till later.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I want to do those things, but I need to write.
Right, exactly.
That's the difference.
Exactly. And I hope you'll come on our show again. You want to say your website one more time? So, I mean, it's really been enjoyable because I think you've got a lot of information to everybody, and we do get a lot of archived people. They really listen on the archives. You know, it's
and that's great. And you know, thank you everybody for listening, and thank you guys for having me on again. And
I love it.
You know, my brand new shiny website is johnwilsonauthor.com. And that will lead you into all my books, obviously, but it will also, and schools, presentations and stuff like that. It will also lead you into my blog, which gives you updates, or will as soon as I get around to updating it. And that's what I can do on Monday. Instead of writing, I'll update my blog. And it will also, like I said, it gives you the email. And I'm happy to take emails if people want to email me about something, if you have, if you just want to say hello, or if you,
I think sometimes
you know,
people
have a specific question.
They don't
want
to bother you, but I think that's very nice that you do that. That's nice, because I think sometimes people go, oh, he's a successful author, he won't want to hear from me. But I think that's really nice of you to offer that. It's a good thing. Yeah, because we always say, and I always say, contact us, you know, and we'll help if you want us to, you know.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, we're all writers. It's we've all struggled or are struggling.
That's
exactly. We've got to stick together because we don't have a,
every project is a new one. It's a new one.
Yeah.
All right, thank you so much. And Virginia, what do you, so you'll be back in Utah soon.
I'll be back in Utah on Monday. I'm it's nice to be back. To me, it's still home. I know I live in Utah now, but I've lived there for 6 years. But I'm from Southern California, so it's nice to be home for the weekend and to see my family and enjoy,
that's
like I said, non-triple-digit numbers. So, yeah, I will, if, you know, those who still need to get a hold of me, they're listening to the show, I'm like, oh, great, I just found she's out. I have email. I have my smartphone. My office number routes to my cell phone. So you can get a hold of me. Just don't expect me to get right back to you like I normally am when I'm in my office.
Right. And then Tuesday,
but, yeah.
I have a show. Tuesday, I have a show at 6 p.m. Eastern time. It's with Jerry Robbins. It's on the Colonial Theater, and that is going to be very interesting. Bennett Pomeranz is the co-host, and we're going to have a great time. And this has been a really fun show. John, thank you so much, and you've given so much information that I hope people will really, you know, listen to what you said, and they can really begin their careers in the right way. So,
thank you very much for having me.
Welcome. We'll call you again because you're very interesting.
Yeah, we'll talk about the gory stuff for boys next time.
That's right, definitely.
Yes, definitely. We'll do that. And we'll have to do it in October, Halloween. Great, great Halloween content.
That's good. Awesome.
Oh, that'd be perfect, yeah.
That'd be perfect.
We want to do a Halloween show, so that's what we'll have. We'll plan that, and we'll email you and get that set
that's
up.
Right. And then we'll just talk about that. All right, and there we go. All right, so, and everybody have a good weekend, and I'll see you on Tuesday. And we also have on our site, we also have what's happening that I did last week, and we're talking about all the shows that we're going to have for the month. And if you need me for any reason, call. You can email www.michiganavenuemedia, and I'll answer your email. And hope everybody has a good weekend. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.